Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're speaking with Diane Spry. Diane Spry has lung cancer, I've been told. Ron?
Yes. Diane is a stage 4 lung cancer survivor who was diagnosed at a young age and is joining us today from beautiful downtown Moment, Illinois. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Diane.
Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
Diane, is there more than one type of lung cancer, or is lung cancer like kind of an overall encompassing thing?
There is some lung cancer. It branches further after that, but the two main forms of lung cancer are non-small cell lung cancer and small cell lung cancer.
Right. That's what I've been led to understand as well. And if I may, I'd like to tell our listeners a little bit more about each. The Lung Cancer Foundation of America states on their website that non-small cell lung cancer is the most common type of lung cancer. More than 8 out of every 10 lung cancer cases are non-small cell lung cancer, abbreviated as NSCLC. Within the non-small cell lung cancer category, there are 3 subtypes: adenocarcinomas, squamous cell carcinomas, and large cell carcinomas. Adenocarcinomas is the most common form of lung cancer, and it begins in the cells in the glands located on the outer part of the lungs. It is most frequently found in women, non-smokers, and people under the age of 45. Squamous cell carcinomas make up 25 to 30% of all lung cancers and are linked to a history of smoking. Squamous cell carcinomas are more common in men than in women. The majority of cases of squamous cell carcinoma start in the center of the lung, often and at an earlier stage than other tumors. Squamous cell carcinomas cause symptoms such as coughing up blood. Large cell carcinomas, however, tend to grow quickly and are usually undetected until they have metastasized to other parts of the body. The rarest of these lung cancers, large cell carcinomas only appear in roughly 1 out of every 10 cases. As more precise diagnostics have become available, many lung cancers previously diagnosed as large cell carcinomas are being reclassified as adenocarcinoma or squamous cell lung cancer. Small cell lung cancer is much less common form of lung cancer, affecting roughly 1 in 10 people diagnosed with lung cancer. Small cell lung cancer is particularly aggressive. It often returns after initial rounds of chemotherapy. And Diane, now I need to ask you, what type do you have?
So I was diagnosed with stage 3D non-small cell adenocarcinoma lung cancer. It has now progressed to stage 4, but because of biomarker testing, I know that it is the EGFR mutation as well as MET amplified, and that has opened up treatment options for me that I otherwise would not have been considered for, such as clinical trials, which I have been to, and the second one, while I am no longer receiving the trial drug, my oncologist and I decided to stop it because of severe neuropathy, and that clinical trial has gotten me to no evidence of disease.
That's fantastic.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful.
Yeah, that's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
Diane, what symptoms did you have that led you to seek out a diagnosis?
So it caught me off guard when I was diagnosed because I was so young, I didn't think of lung cancer. And I remember I had a cough, and it was a different cough than I've ever had before. It was a dry cough. And I also had a wheeze, and I remember sitting at my parents' house and thinking, like, I would make this wheeze noise, and then thinking, man, that's kind of weird. But then I didn't think anything of it because I was young, and lung cancer wasn't in my mind. And so it was the weekend, and I had the pain in my chest was just increasing and increasing. And long story short, I called my sister and she said, I just started crying. And she said, you need to go to the ER. So I went to the ER and I didn't try to be admitted very quickly because I didn't want to go in and say I had chest pain, but I told them it hurts here and I pointed at my chest and I didn't sit in the waiting room longer than 3 minutes.
Oh, wow. And did you receive a diagnosis pretty quickly thereafter?
I think so. So I was in the hospital for 5 days, and within that 5 days, I had a bronchoscopy and a CT scan. And the doctor told me that I had cancer, but they didn't know what kind of cancer it was. He gave me an unspecified some sort of cancer diagnosis. They knew it was in my chest. So they didn't know if it had metastasized from somewhere else or what the case was. So I had a friend that was diagnosed with lung cancer, also at a young age. She was more of an acquaintance. And I reached out to her, and she referred me to an oncologist in Chicago. And that is who I continue to see to this day, and I fully contribute her to saving my life.
Oh, that's wonderful.
What hospital, if you don't mind me asking?
So I started at Northwestern, and I one of my clinical trials, I traveled to Boston.
Oh, wow.
And then I came back, and I was at the University of Chicago, and now I'm back at Northwestern.
Okay.
But it's all the same.
Yeah, we found that traveling in order to find the best physicians for your care is important sometimes.
Right. Yeah, it's good if you can do that.
Yeah, and a big shout out to your friend, your childhood acquaintance, I guess.
Yes.
For telling you kind of what to look for that early.
And to your sister for
exactly
right.
Yeah, for your sister having you go to the ER.
Yes. I fully contribute my friend who got me to the right oncologist for also saving my life, because she got me to the person that actually saved my life. So it's like I have so many players on my team.
That's great. That's super.
Yeah. Diane, could you tell us and our listeners what are some of the causes of lung cancer?
Sure. The biggest risk factor, and I always say the biggest risk factor for lung cancer is simply having lungs. There are other factors that are very well known, such as smoking and environmental pollution, but there are also other factors that people come in contact with that can get a lung cancer diagnosis. And one of those is having high levels of radon in your home. If you have not had your home tested, you can Google radon testing, and a lot of information will be pulled up. When I was first diagnosed, we tested my parents' home, my apartment, and then my boyfriend, who is now my husband's house. And if you do come across a high level of radon, you can get your house mitigated.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, we actually have a radon mitigation system installed at this home.
Yeah. And Illinois is known for relatively high levels of radon.
Right.
Yeah. And also, it can be in your school, and you're there, you know, or your workplace, and you spend
true.
A good portion of your day there as well.
True.
Yeah.
Very true.
Right. Diane, you told us that your symptoms were like a dry cough. Are there any other symptoms of lung cancer that we should be aware of, or that other people should be aware of?
So, relatively speaking, lung cancer doesn't cause signs and symptoms in its earliest stages. Signs and symptoms of lung cancer typically occur only when the disease is advanced.
Okay.
Such as my case, it was stage 3B and then it progressed to stage 4. Signs and symptoms of lung cancer may include a new cough that doesn't go away, coughing up any amount of blood, even if it's small, shortness of breath, chest pain, hoarseness, losing weight without trying, bone pain, and headache.
Okay.
And Diane, how did your healthcare team come about your diagnosis? You said that you had the bronchoscopy and the CT scan. Is that what led to it? Or
kind of. When I was in the ER, I had many tests that got that. So many tests go into a lung cancer diagnosis.
Okay.
For me personally, when I was in the ER, they didn't suspect lung cancer. So I was actually given a blood test, and it came back for a high, I don't really know the technical term, but it came back for a high D dimer.
Okay.
And so they said, oh, we know what the problem is. You have a blood clot.
Oh.
I was given a chest CT, and while they did find a lung embolism, they also found a mass.
Oh.
And so then that kind of, they kind of put a curve in things, and it was like, well, you know, we were looking for this, but we also found that. So, and you're relatively young, so we're going to do more tests, and that's what led to the bronchoscopy.
Okay.
What is a bronchoscopy? I don't even know.
So they go down your throat and they go into your lung and they take tissue samples and then they test that.
Okay.
You're not awake during that, are you?
They do a, it's called a...
like a twilight?
I can't remember. Yeah, twilight.
Okay.
They do a twilight sedation.
Okay. Yeah, because that
although
sounds...
I had a very bad experience. I've actually had three bronchoscopies, and the first two I woke up in the middle, and it was very traumatizing.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Can't even imagine.
Yeah.
Well, you've had a transesophageal echo, and...
I was awake?
Yeah, you were awake, but you just don't remember it because of the twilight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you were gagging the whole time. It was pretty gross.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and what treatments have you received for the lung cancer? I know you were talking about the trials, but I guess starting at the beginning of your diagnosis, what have you had to go through?
So my treatment history is actually very extensive, and I'll try to make it short.
No, you don't have to. Take your time.
I was tested for the biomarkers right away, and it came back for an EGFR mutation, which is great news. However, when I got the news, I started crying because I didn't know that was good news.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I thought being positive for something was bad. So anyway, I started on a drug called afatinib. And after a month, I don't know why we tested so early, but after a month, we found out that it wasn't working. My mass got bigger. My blood clots weren't going away. And so I was admitted into the hospital for emergent chemo. I started cisplatin and Alimta. And I did that regimen for four rounds of both drugs and then two of just the maintenance Alimta. I was able to have irradiation after that, which further shrank the tumor. But shortly after that, I developed a rather large lymph node on my neck.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we switched treatments, and I was started on a pill called Tresiba. After probably not too long, we knew that wasn't working either because the lymph node was still there. We did a biopsy on the lymph node, so we knew it was cancer, and it didn't decrease. So my oncologist, she sent my tumor sample out for further mutations testing, and we found that it was what's called MET amplified, which is a resistance mechanism. And you usually don't see it so soon in a diagnosis, but mine was like within the first year. So that is when my oncologist knew that she needed to refer my case to a different hospital, and she referred me to Dana-Farber in Boston for a clinical trial. And that clinical trial, I was in it for 11 months. Sorry, my dog's
okay. That's okay.
Oh, that's okay. We've got dogs too.
We've had dogs snoring under our recording studio the whole morning.
Yeah.
Everybody.
They were sitting here quiet, so I thought it would be okay.
No, that's okay.
Okay, so anyway, so she referred me to a hospital in Boston for a clinical trial, and I was in that trial for 11 months before I had progression. The Boston oncologist thought that we would be able to do surgery to stop the progression, and so I had a wedge resection, and looking back on that, it probably wasn't the smartest of ideas, and we kind of just used it as a big biopsy. So... to confirm that I was still EGFR and still not amplified.
Mm-hmm.
But once we got that information, we were able to start me on a new drug combo, and that was cabozantinib. Cabozantinib is approved for thyroid cancer, but has not yet been approved for lung cancer.
Okay.
But because it targets the MET amplification, he started me on cabozantinib, and I actually got 2 years out of that combination, and I thought that was like the best, even though the side effects for the drug were awful, and it gave me like a horrible quality of life. And looking back, it was a horrible time. But I once again progressed. I had just a regular CT scan. I wasn't feeling bad or anything. And I went in for my regular normal CT scan, and there was progression of 2 lymph nodes in my abdomen. So I was, at this point, I'm back at my Chicago oncologist, and she luckily was starting a clinical trial for MET amplification and EGFR mutation in Chicago at the University of Chicago.
Okay.
So it was an infusion drug, and in combination with the Tarceva that I was already taking, and I ended up stopping that trial. I got almost a year out of it, but I stopped that because I had severe neuropathy, and that was hindering my ability to walk.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually, it landed me in physical therapy for 8 weeks. But it got me to NED, it got me to no evidence of disease, and that's currently where we're at today. I'm currently on Tarceva, and hopefully my scans continue to remain NED and stable. I get my scans every 3 months. We actually pushed it back because of the COVID, so I'm going 4 months between my scans, but I work full-time, and I feel great.
You're working full-time. Wow.
That's
yes.
Amazing.
It is amazing.
Do you have to take any...
So that's a medication, the Tarceva?
Yes, it's a pill. I take it once a day.
And what would you say is, you know, like you've been taking these different medications, what would you say is you've mentioned some specific medications. Is there an overall umbrella of medications that people with lung cancer may be prescribed?
So, there's chemotherapy, and that's like the traditional therapy for lung cancer. But the biggest breakthrough right now in the lung cancer community is the introduction of immunotherapy.
Okay.
And while I have not yet been given this treatment, it is very promising, and it is possible in my future.
I know Ron's going to ask you a question in a second, but I had a friend that had bone cancer back in the 1980s. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm old. I'm an old fart. But at that point, they were doing immunotherapy in the Bahamas. An American doctor was trying to get immunotherapy covered by the AMA, and they wouldn't cover it. And he moved to the Bahamas to treat people. And now I'm glad to see that it's coming back and being used starting to be used as a therapy.
But a word of caution.
Okay.
You know, if someone says they have a cure for cancer and the AMA is blocking them,
there might be a reason.
Maybe do a good amount of research before going.
Oh, no,
to
I found
person.
Out the reason.
Okay. Yeah. All
okay.
right.
All right. Okay. Go ahead, Ron.
So you're sorry.
Okay, we're going to get back to Diane here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just a minute ago, you mentioned that you work, I think you said, full-time. With your condition, how has that affected your you mentioned your work life. What about your personal and social life?
So it really affected me. I actually am having my 6-year cancerversary on April 11th. So it's taken me a lot to get to where I am today. So initially, this diagnosis, it took away my independence. And I was very sick in the beginning. I've only been in the hospital a total of 3 weeks through this whole 6 years. And my family, they seen things that they shouldn't have seen coming from a 30-year-old adult. They had to help me go to the bathroom, amongst other things. And it was just, it was very humbling, I guess I would say. I actually have completely blocked that out of my memory, some of the hospital stays, because it's traumatizing.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So because of that, my mom moved in with us for a short while, and she was basically there just to make sure I was eating. So one of the biggest side effects with the chemotherapy was I lost my appetite, and because I lost my appetite, I also lost a lot of weight. Which I am happy to say that I am back to a healthy weight.
Good.
I did mention work. I currently work full time, but it took me a little bit to get back to full time. So I only took off a total of 8 months. So I when I was diagnosed, I would go into the office and I would work as much as I could. And then I had to take 8 months off because I was just too sick, and I was traveling back and forth from Chicago to Boston. And I started back up after the 8 months. I was doing more of like a casual part-time. And then I would just help in the office. I didn't have my regular position back. I would work casual part-time filing and whatnot. So I worked myself back up to a part-time position. And then once I felt comfortable working longer hours, I actually found a new job, and I currently work full-time in a supply chain role, which I'm an essential employee because it's food supply chain.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm currently working from home, and I love what I do because it works well with my life and my activity level.
Good.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any advice for our listeners that you'd like to share if they think they might have lung cancer, or just in general?
Yes. So my advice is to definitely listen to your body. And then if you have a cough that's longer than 2 weeks, please get it checked out. As I have mentioned, and I always tell this to anybody that will listen, anyone with lungs can get lung cancer. And it doesn't care if you're young or old, a man or a woman, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Then if you get a diagnosis of any sort of cancer, you have to be your own best advocate. You know what's going on in your body. And if you feel something isn't right, vocalize it. Talk to whoever you need to get whatever testing you need.
That's very excellent advice. We hear that time and time again, that if it's your body, you know what's right, what's wrong, if it's unusual, and you've got to vocalize it to your healthcare providers.
Yeah.
Excellent advice. Thank you so much for joining us today, Diane. Do you want to share any social connections, like Facebook links or anything, or Twitter or anything, with our listeners, or...
Well, I use my Twitter account for my lung cancer advocacy.
Uh-huh.
My Twitter name is D-I-I-A-N-E-E-E. So it's like a long version of Diane.
Could you spell that one more time for me?
Sure. D-I-I-A-N-E-E-E.
E-E-E. Okay, great. That's Twitter. Thank you.
Yeah.
Again, Diane, thank you for coming on our show and sharing your story. We really appreciate you doing that for us and for the listeners.
Yes, for
thank
sure.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoy telling my story to anybody who will listen.
Well, you know what? It's important to get that information out. Thank you.
Thank you. It was lovely speaking
with
you.
Thank you.
If our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com. through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.